not the unexpected part, really. We can rely on God to do this. The unexpected part tends to be the how. God's really good at keeping his promises, but he's not so good at delivering when I want, or on my timing, or how I would like him to do it. So I hope you don't mind, I'm a little bit out of practice being up the front on a Sunday morning. Haven't done this in a good 5 years. So I'm going to run this a little bit like youth group, and you guys are just going to have to play along and encourage me by pretending to be youthful and rowdy. Some of you don't have to pretend. And what I'm going to do is ask a question, and you guys have permission to get rowdy and respond. And my question, second slide, is, think in the Bible, where have you read how God has showed up and answered a promise in a way that was unexpected? Cool, we've had two people yell out, Jesus, you're stealing my thunder for the entire message, thank you. And one person mentioned the burning bush. Any other examples? Abraham? Saul, where Saul's life changed, walking on water was probably unexpected. Any other things that happened in the entire Bible? Alright, so we've got... this is good, this feels like you grew down, thank you. So we've got people walking through walls. We've got parting of the Red Seas. I'm going to chuck out talking donkeys. Floating axe heads. That's an unusual thing that doesn't quite align with our physics. Anything else? Loaves and fishes. You don't expect to go to a picnic with no food and end up with more food than 5,000 people can eat. That's an unexpected way that God shows up. That's awesome.
Shoes that didn't wear out.
Shoes that didn't wear out. In 40 years. In the desert. That's not actually something I've thought about. That's a very good point. Awesome. Thank you so much for your examples. They're great. I appreciate you playing along and helping me feel a little bit more comfortable. So look, the whole Bible, if we're walking through the Bible, the whole thing is full of just the bizarre and unexpected. It's pretty much God's default. And sometimes we can look at these stories and feel like, well, actually, if Jesus walked on water and I was there, I'd be totally cool with it because I know who Jesus is and that makes perfect sense. But we kind of have the benefit of hindsight. We've been exposed to these stories for a long time and we've had a chance to get used to the specific stories and ideas. The people back then would have been challenged socially, their expectations were being challenged in their physical world, the spiritual expectations and their cultural expectations. There was a lot going on. And while you say that, if a donkey starts talking to you, I'm pretty confident that you would freak out just a little. So when we're thinking about how God has shown up, it is important to think about the people he was showing up to and how they might have been expecting God to show up and what he actually did in their lives. Now, I am not surprised that Jesus got mentioned pretty early in the piece. Thank you for stealing my entire message, guys. Good job. What we'd like to do, though, so I've given you the answer at the beginning, and we're going to backtrack now and talk a little bit about what the people in Jesus' time were actually expecting, who Jesus really was, and then what we're going to do with that information for now. So you can flip over to the next slide if you like. To give a detailed background on Jewish culture and everything that was going on in that time and bring a message this morning isn't going to happen. So I'm going to do a really, really brief overview. So if anyone has no idea, you'll hopefully have enough information to understand why Jesus was an unexpected answer. The Jewish people around the time that Jesus was born were, well, they had been for a long time under occupation. They lived in their homeland, but they were subject to a lot of rules and regulations by outsiders. See, the Romans occupied a large part of the known world at this time. They did some great things. We can't poo-poo the Romans too much. They invented roads. They had pipes and plumbing. They made them out of lead because they didn't know everything about, healthy water supplies and not poisoning your people. But they made a lot of great advancements. And there were some good things in that time, so we won't poo-poo them too much. But there were also a lot of issues for the Jewish people during that time. They didn't have heaps of religious freedom. They had to operate within the confines of this second society and what they've imposed on them. They had a lot of oppressive taxes that they were subject to. It was a very politically charged climate. There was a lot of unrest. When we think about Jewish people, we tend to sort of think that they all had one collective idea of how they related to the Roman people and what they all thought, and that's not the case either. Within the Jewish community, there was all these different ideas on how things should be run as well. So we don't have cohesiveness among the Jewish people. We've got Pharisees who have one idea on how to run things. We've got a bunch of zealots who are just like, let's just fight people and take our lands back, which would have gone really well. If anyone knows anything about Roman military tactics, that would not have gone well at all. They were really good at that. So it's a very, very, very broad overview. But what I want you to take away is at the time that Jesus was born, the Jewish people weren't free to do their own thing, and they wanted things to change as a general view. And they were waiting for someone to come and change it. I've lost my place, sorry guys. So prior to the issues with the Romans, there'd been a whole bunch of other people who'd been oppressing them. They hadn't been free to do their own thing very often for about 400 years. And God had promised a chosen one to come and help re-establish a kingdom like what they remembered. Now, there was a high point in Jewish history where David was king. He had a really great kingdom. There was quite a bit of peace around that time. And if Jewish people were thinking back to an ideal kingdom, that was probably the kingdom they envisioned. So when they knew that God had promised someone to come and lead them into a new kingdom, that was what they were thinking of, a warrior king like David, who would make everything right and get things back to the way they felt it should be. Now, I don't know what your expectations of a person would look like, but if I'm imagining a king, I'm imagining someone quite regal. They dress well. They probably have a horse. That's what I imagine kings to look like. They probably had a similar expectation. Again, speaking in really broad strokes. If you look throughout the Old Testament, there's also a lot of prophecies relating to this chosen person. So the Jewish people not only had like a cultural expectation of what that person would be like, they also had some real specifics that God had spoken about. They knew that this person would come from a particular family line. They would be born in a certain place. There was suggestion that they would probably perform signs and miracles. There was a few criteria for what this person would look like. It wasn't a new expectation. The Jewish people had held this for quite some time, and they were a people that trusted God. They knew that God kept their promises, so it wasn't a half-hearted, oh, he might send the Messiah. They knew that he was going to do this. The question was when. So people were actively looking for this person. When John the Baptist was out doing his ministry, people would approach him and ask, are you the guy that was promised? Are you the person we've been waiting for? And he let them know that he wasn't, that there was someone else coming. And Jewish enemies were aware that the Jewish people were looking for this king. King Herod sent people out and tried to locate the king that was being born when he got wind that some people thought it was happening, because he knew what their expectations were and he wasn't happy with another king rising up and threatening him. So if we consider this very condensed rundown of all these expectations, it's kind of understanding why they might have been a bit disappointed when Jesus turned up. He didn't quite fit their expectations. So the next slide, Jesus, the unexpected answer. We started with the answer, so let's breeze through that. When you read the New Testament today, the first four books give a unique account from a couple of people's perspective about Jesus. And if you read through the accounts of his life, you'll notice that he doesn't look like a king. There is no horse. He's not dressed up in white robes, carrying a sword around. He doesn't look like a stereotypical king. So when they were looking for someone who was coming to fill all these years of promises, it's kind of understandable why they might have missed him. He actually spent a lot of time breaking expectations that a lot of people had for the chosen person. And we see this happening all throughout the New Testament in Jesus' life. People expected this Messiah to appear in Bethlehem, which is what he did. But he didn't grow up there, and people thought of him as a Nazirite, which was unexpected. Kings don't usually get born in spare rooms, from my experience. They expected that he would be hailed upon his arrival, and he was, but by shepherds. Another unexpected answer to a prophecy and an understanding of what God was going to look like when he sent this person. They didn't expect him to grow up where he did. It wasn't a kingly place. No one expected that the Messiah to the Jewish people would spend the majority of his time confronting Jewish leaders rather than confronting Roman oppressors. That wasn't in the list of things that the Messiah should be doing. And they certainly didn't expect him to hang out with tax collectors or chat with filthy Samaritan women at wells instead of going about and being a holy person and leading the charge. They didn't expect that the son of David would be convicted of blasphemy by a council, executed without dignity by the Romans outside of the city of David, and no one expected that he would probably then rise again 3 days later. This is the reality of the unexpected answer God said to the promises that he made to people over hundreds of years. So all the things that I mentioned were prophesied, which means that someone heard God speak and communicated that to the people, that this is what God was saying, this was what he was promising. Just in case anyone doesn't know that word, that's okay. So there's no doubt in my mind that Jesus was the person that they were waiting for. We've got a lot of hindsight and we can see how he fit into those different prophecies. The next slide, I'm hoping that it works. It's really hard to see. If you look real close, there's a whole bunch of tiny little lines that make up what looks like a rainbow. Can people see that? Yeah. So what each of those lines are, it's a connection from a prophecy made in the Old Testament, and then it goes and links right over to where it was fulfilled in the New Testament. There's a lot of lines there. Now, if I make a list of facts about me, so I was born in Mitcham. Put your hand up if you're born in Mitcham. Awesome. A couple of people. Cool. Is your middle name Helen? Keep your hand up. All right, that's just me. So I can eliminate an entire room of people with two facts about myself. How many facts and little lines are up there? It's very clear to me that for someone to fulfill these promises and fulfill all of them, it's not a coincidence. This is God's guy. Jesus is the cornerstone of our entire Christian faith. It's a really good example of a way that God keeps his promises without doing what's necessarily expected. We have an entire history in our Bible, and many of us have personal history of God turning up at the 11th hour, doing things that are just plain weird to fulfill promises made. It almost feels like it's part of who God is, that he kind of gets a bit of a kick out of shocking us sometimes. And we get the honour of joyfully partnering with God of the unexpected and following him in what he's doing. So after starting with this example, I'd like to put up on a quick video which is going to have another unexpected story that's happened in the last 2 years, so a little bit more recently. Thank you.
And all of a sudden my heart started pounding really hard, so I tried to stand up to go to my room to lay down, and my legs didn't work. And that was the first of 6 months trying to figure out what was wrong with me. I was fainting between 15 and 45 times a day. Sort of every day seemed like something else that I loved sort of got taken from me. And I couldn't be the mom I wanted to be, or the wife I wanted to be, or the friend I wanted to be. August of 2016, I went to Stanford Medical Center, and they diagnosed me with a rare condition called Guillain-Barré syndrome, an autoimmune neurological disease where your own immune system eats away at your nervous system. The doctors, after I got diagnosed, said there is no cure now. It's just something that thankfully does go away on its own, but some people are never really the same. And so I was sort of slowly getting my life back. And then January 2nd, 2017, all of a sudden I started feeling really weird. I got diagnosed with a relapse of Guillain-Barré syndrome, which only happens in about 3 to 5% of people who get the disease. Nobody knows how long it will last. Nobody knows how long it will take you to walk again. And so then every part of my life that had started coming back was sort of felt like the rug got ripped out from under me. I just felt like somehow like a failure. How is this happening to me again? What did I do something wrong? And I would feel like, is God really real? Is he really there? If he is real, is he good? April 21st, 2017, I just cried out to God and I said, God, I don't think I can do this anymore. I don't know how I'm going to make it out as a living, loving, caring, kind person who loves you. The next morning I woke up and we left to go on a date. My husband and I had coffee. We just talked about life, talked about how in the world we were going to make it through this mess. And a girl came up to us and she said, hi, excuse me, I'm learning to hear the voice of God and I believe that God wants me to pray for you. Would that be okay? And so I just, yes, please do. And my right leg started convulsing uncontrollably. It was just a little bit at first and then more and more. But I got up to try to walk and nothing had really changed. So we got in our truck to go drive to the park. And my right and left leg this time started involuntarily convulsing. And so I decided to get out and walk. And I walked without any problem at all. My legs went exactly where I wanted them to go for the first time in a year and a half. And so I decided that I wanted to run. This is impossible, but it's happening. And my husband was holding the phone. He was recording me. And he just dropped the phone in his lap and started weeping. His mind couldn't really believe that God could be that good. I get to live a life that's completely free of all boundaries. And I get to share that with my daughter, who now has this memory for her entire life of me coming home and leaving in a wheelchair and coming back home and being completely free and able to run and able to run with me. And she has that memory of what God did for her whole life. So it's pretty awesome.
It's a very cool story. I picked this one because when this occurred, I had a friend who was actually over at Bethel. So I didn't hear about it through these videos or anything. I heard about it because he messaged our home group and was sending video that was shown up there telling us about what God had done firsthand. So kind of an unexpected encounter. Going out to a coffee shop, let's talk about how our life has changed drastically. God turns up in someone who wasn't actually, by the sounds of it, particularly sure. They said they were learning, partnered with what God was doing, and that was the outcome. Alrighty, we're getting into the good stuff. So take a second and just think about how that might have felt. You don't know that you can walk again. You don't know when you're going to walk again. And God turns up in a coffee shop. That's unexpected. You're sitting in a coffee shop and suddenly you feel prompted to go and pray for someone who's in a wheelchair. That's unexpected. We use big examples from the Bible like talking donkeys, but I wanted to have an example that shows this is actually what unexpected God can look like here and now. When I think about how God turns up, I often have an idea of what that's going to look like. Bear with me, I have a dad joke for this. So, you probably know this one, but it's the best example, I think, that's not really personal, because I don't like to talk about times that I've stuffed up, where God's shown up. So there's a guy, and he's on his roof in a flood. Yeah, Adam knows it. So all these floodwaters, and he's on his roof, so he's praying that God will save him. Please don't let me die on my roof, God. And a guy in a rowboat turns up, and he goes, hey, mate, jump in my boat. Let's get out of here. You can't stay here. You're going to die. And this guy's like, no, man, it's okay. I'm praying my God will save me. 20 minutes later, the waters are still rising, and a guy in a motorboat turns up, and he's like, hey, you need to come with me now. If you don't come, you're going to die. Get in my boat. Let's get out of here. The guy's response is, no, 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 I'm praying. My God will save me. It's fine. Can't convince him to get in the boat. It's not safe to stay, so he leaves as well. And then eventually this guy's on the top of his roof. He's clinging onto his chimney, and a helicopter sees him as it's flying past. Pilot comes down, and she calls out, buddy, grab the rope. Let's get out of here. We can help you. And he's like, no, 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 no. It's fine. I'm praying. My God can save me. The guy dies. He goes to heaven. He's not happy. Marches straight up to God and he says, God, I was faithful. I prayed. I wanted you to save me. I asked you. You said that you'd do these things. Why didn't you save me? And God, who's an Aussie in this version, goes, mate, I sent you a rowboat. I sent you a motorboat. I sent you a helicopter. What more did you want? Sometimes God turning up can look really practical. It's not always big and loud and flashing lights and crazy. When we see God turn up in loud and spectacular ways, and maybe even multiple times we get to experience how he turns up, well, sometimes we form a bit of an expectation that this is how God shows up for me. This is what this looks like. And similarly, if we meet God consistently in a quiet place, if we're used to tuning into the quiet whisper of what God's doing, it can be difficult to envision God operating outside of what we're used to or what we've envisioned. And I don't think that anyone does this intentionally, but if we're looking for something like a miraculous levitation off a roof, we're going to miss the rowboats and the motorboats and the helicopters that God sends when we're asking him to come and meet our need. We can miss what God is doing if we're looking for something specific. I'll change that slide. So it's important to take time to consider, what is it that I envision from God? What have I seen before? And what am I expecting God to do this time? Not because we only want God to turn up the way we want, but just to be mindful that he might be trying to do something new with us. It's one of the reasons we ask people to pray with their eyes open. We're looking for what God's physically doing in the room. God can do long-term journeys. We see people who get healed through doctors. They treat this, God heals, I believe, but that can come through treatment from doctors and a long-term journey with him. I've also seen people get up and their illnesses have disappeared in an instant. He does things both ways. I've seen God turn up in loud manifestations where there's a lot of movement, there's a lot of noise, and that's exciting and we love that. But he is just as able to meet someone who looks like they're just sitting and having a quiet contemplation. He comes in the loud, in the quiet, and in the instant and the long. Please play with your eyes open. We don't want to miss what God's up to. And if we want to keep in line with what he's doing and what he's got in store, we need to do what the girl in that coffee shop did. We have to actually listen. For some people, that might be a little bit difficult. How do I listen to God? There's a really good couple of weeks coming up in September and prophetic course that's happening. If that's something that you're sitting here thinking, I'm not entirely sure how to do that, please grab a flyer today. I know Di hasn't spoken more on it, but that's something that would be helpful, I think, to hearing what God's up to and getting really tangible practice on that. Jesus was someone who did and really weird things. We mentioned them before. He walked on water. He stuck his fingers in people's ears. He spit and made mud and put it on people. He's calling out the wrong people. He did weird stuff. But Jesus also told us that he only ever did what he heard the Father say to do. He was the physical embodiment, the visible version of the invisible God. He did nothing separate. And he took time out to engage with God and listen to what he was doing and partner with what he heard God say. We often compare ourselves to maybe more the disciples in the Bible than Jesus, but we're called to model what he does. So in the same way, we can take time to engage with God, to ask what he's doing. And we can do that in long places, in quiet places in the morning. We can do that at a coffee shop, just sitting quietly. What are you up to right now, God? What do you want me to notice? And that might happen as a thought. That might be a feeling. It comes in all different ways. And it takes time to practice and get to really get familiar with his voice. But when we do, we're better equipped to partner with what he's got in plan. There's a second part to that, though. We don't just get to listen to what God's up to. The second part was she heard God, and then she actually got up and did something. This is the bit that scares a lot of us. So she felt that God was prompting her to pray. She was learning to hear God's voice. She put that out there as a disclaimer. She might have got it wrong. But she acted. And this is probably the part two that we sometimes miss. It's okay to hear God's voice, but if he says go and then you go, that's a good idea, God, thanks, and just sit there, we don't actually partner with what he's doing in that moment. All of the stories in the Old Testament and the New Testament, when they did crazy things, when they poured water on wood before they set it on fire, before they went into battle, before they went and prayed for people in homes, they did it out of response to what they heard from God. I don't think that there's anyone that would just pour water on wood before they set it on fire for the fun of it. That's a bad idea. All of the stories that are in the Bible come out of a partnership and relationship with God and listening to him and acting on what he says. The problem with doing that is we don't always know how the outcome's going to be. Our unexpected God does the unexpected. It might look like someone getting up and walking. It might look like someone saying, actually, no thanks, I'm not interested in what you're selling. Faith is spelt R-I-S-K. It's a Vineyard saying. We spell faith as risk. Stepping out can be really hard, but it's obedience that God wants us to do. The anticipation that God can do something with our obedience, listening for him and going for it, is what he's asking. We don't have to expect it to look a certain way. We can partner with what he's doing and give him the freedom to make it happen. Which is all well and good when it does happen, but sometimes it doesn't. And there's probably people in here who are thinking, this is all well and good, Joe, but you don't actually know what I've been hoping for. And you don't know what I've been trusting him for. And you don't know the promises that I haven't seen fulfilled. I don't want to stand up here and make these suggestions and downplay the things that are going on in people's lives. That's not my intention. And I don't want to say that if you're not experiencing a particular promise being fulfilled, that that's on you. We live in an overlap time. Jesus came and he started bringing the kingdom here to earth. We get to see the miraculous happen, but it's not fully here yet. And what that means is sometimes kingdom breaks through and we get to see things like that video. We get to experience tangible comforts and people coming and being Jesus to us in moments. But sometimes we don't. I don't want to paint an unrealistic picture of people's circumstances. What I'd love to point out is that God is still God. He is the God of the unexpected. And while we can't always expect to see a particular outcome, we can anticipate that he is going to do something for us and with us because of who we've seen him to be already. It's a very confusing place to be. I hope I'm making sense. The consequence of living in this place, though, is that it can be really, really difficult to trust, especially when there's been promise of things like healing and that hasn't been actualized in our lives just yet. And it's really hard to continue hoping when it's been a long, long time that we've been hoping for a particular thing. I don't have all the answers for why that doesn't happen. If anyone tells you they do, they're lying. Don't listen to them. I can acknowledge that it's hard. On the next slide, if you can, darling. What I'd encourage us to do is to create space to look for what God is doing. If he's not addressing the particular thing that we want right now, don't give up on it. Keep praying, keep knocking, keep seeking, keep asking. but also look for what he is doing, which comes back to listening to God. We're kind of circling a little bit. The next thing that we can do is we can speak out what we actually would like to see and talk to God about it. And we can pray and we can ask him to intervene. The Bible says that he bends down to listen to us. He does care about what you say and he cares about what's on your heart, even if your circumstances don't look like you're in a place that's particularly well cared for. This entire little spiel actually came out of a time of prayer. So during a staff meeting, because that's what we do on Tuesday mornings, they're good fun, there was just a sense in me that something needed to be addressed. The way that I pray sometimes is I get to declare stuff. So when I see that things aren't quite how they should be, I speak over it rather than speaking to it. And what the things were that we were, that was on my heart that day, I kind of just went on a ramble and everyone else in the meeting just let me, which was really polite. And the things that were coming up was that it is difficult to trust and is difficult to hope when we're expecting something and we can't anticipate what God's going to do and we're not seeing it happen. My declaration on that day was that God would give us an injection of hope and would renew our ability to trust and also move in those things that we're hoping for. And the last thing we can the last thing we can do when we're swamped down, when I can't see what God's doing, when I can't speak because I'm so tired of speaking and I don't see any results, is to praise. At the beginning of today, I talked a little bit about Jesus being an unexpected answer. Regardless of circumstances and where we are now, he is still that answer. He is still a fulfillment of promise. He is still changing and making things new. And he will continue to do that. And even if God hadn't done all of this, he's still worthy of our praise. I'm a firm believer that when we praise, it helps reposition our focus so that we can more clearly see who God is and then as a result, more clearly see where we are in relationship to him. If I've said all these things and you're thinking, Joe, you don't really get it, if you can, and invite other people in with your journey, please don't do stuff alone. We're not designed to do it well that way. Look for what God's doing around you and in you. Speak to what's happening around you and in you and praise God for who he is and where he's taking you with this. Don't get frustrated if you don't feel like you're in the right place. I don't think you guys are in the wrong place, but even if you were, God's a God who journeys with us. He will reset our GPS. It will do that horrible redirecting thing and tell us to take a bunch of back streets, but he will get us back on path. It's not going to be an expected journey. We don't know the streets necessarily. It might feel really uncomfortable, but he's not going to go, oh, you took a left turn instead of a right and leave you there. That's not the God that makes promises and keeps them. So how do we respond to this? I've got three invitations that I'm going to make today, and then we're going to just open it up for you guys to move around, and if anything's hit with you today and it feels right, you can respond in that way. And if everyone's sitting here thinking that I've rambled and it hasn't, don't worry, I won't be offended. You don't have to do anything. Please don't feel like there's any expectation to act in a certain way. The first invitation is to anyone who might be sitting here thinking, I don't really know this unexpected God. I don't know this Jesus guy who fulfilled the promises, but I'd really like to. It doesn't matter if you've come here for the first time today or if you've come here every single Sunday for the last 19 years. If that's where you are today, please grab someone that you trust, someone that you came with. Let them know that you're ready to start going on that journey with our God and say yes to that. You can do it privately. I don't need people to come up the front and declare it in that way. If you'd like to, you're welcome. But grab someone that you trust. Let them know where you're at. Start that journey today. The second invitation is for those people who are feeling like I would like an injection of hope. I haven't been met in the way that I expected. I haven't been met in the times that I expected. And I'm tired and fearful of hoping and anticipating God to move and not seeing it happen. Or perhaps you need a renewal of trust. We know that God keeps his promises, but I just don't feel like I can trust him right now. After this happens, I'll let you know when. If you'd like to grab someone that you trust and pray with them, you can do that. I'm going to ask some elders and some people that I know are trustworthy and you pray good prayers to come up here, and you can come and meet with them if that's easier. Whatever is more comfortable for you guys. And the last invitation is for anyone who didn't tick boxes one or two. So everyone gets an invitation. And that is the invitation to anticipate that God will move today. It may not be what you expect, but please try and listen to him. If you're not good at that, grab someone else, listen together. You don't have to go and try and do this all on your own. Try and look for what he's up to and act when he does speak. We get to partner with him. He's not a God that expects us to go and do things alone. He goes with us, and he empowers us by Holy Spirit to do those things that he asks us to do.